Voices of the Frontline segment of the 4 o'clock hour on KPFK, 90.7 in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara. Right now we're going to be joined with Luis Sanchez. Luis, are you on the phone?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, welcome, Luis.
Thank you for having me.
Luis is the executive director of Inner City Struggle, whose mission says Inner City Struggle promotes safe, healthy, and nonviolent communities by organizing youth and families in Boyle Heights and East Los Angeles to work toward economic and social justice. So I wanted to start off. I have an article from the East Side Sun. I just want to start off with the first couple paragraphs here. Title, this is in Thursday, February 5th, 2004. Title is Students, Parents Push for Two New Schools Around Garfield. Because Maria's last name starts with an S, Salcedo, last year she had to experience the entire breadth of her sophomore physiology class at Garfield High School sitting on the edge of the science laboratory counter. Why? Because her classroom couldn't fit all 63 desks needed to seat the course's 63 enrolled students, explained Salcedo, now a junior. So the teacher, having few options left, opted to grant desk privileges alphabetically. After all the desks had been occupied, the dozen or so students left standing were asked to sit in the room's periphery laboratory stations for the remainder of the course. So, Luis, for those people who are still kind of mystified or are wondering about overcrowding in LAUSD, this seems a pretty big kind of slap in the face around that.
Especially because in many of these schools, what people don't also realize is that there hasn't been many schools built, in particular in East Los Angeles, in close to 79 years. 79 years,
what,
for example.
Luis, what are some of the demographics? Tell me, just to start broadly, what are the demographics of LAUSD as far as race and ethnic?
Well, Los Angeles Unified School District has a population of close to 735,000 people attending LAUSD schools as we speak, and over 90% of them are people of color. The school district is actually larger than the city of Oakland and San Francisco.
And then, so how does the 90% people of color break down?
It's close to 70% Latino, 10%, close to like 10% African American and 10% Asian Pacific Islander, with the rest being white or other.
Okay. And we talked a little bit earlier, and you told me the statistic of the 59% disappeared. Can you tell that to our listeners?
Yeah. At Garfield High School, we've actually done a study of the last 4 years. And the reason we say disappeared is because the district would say only 10% or 5-10% have dropped out of Garfield High School. But when we've done our study, it shows that of the incoming freshman class, for like we would say 96, comes in 1,400 students. And then within 4 years later, only 59%, I mean close to 59%, are no longer there. And to show you a statistic even more alarming is in 2002's graduating class, 66% of the Garfield students had disappeared. That means they were no longer on campus. And the district, along with the state, has no way of knowing what happened to these students. They'll tell you stories like, oh, some of them moved back to Mexico, or some of them are at continuation schools. But the district and the state have no way of accounting for any of these students. And that's why we call them the disappeared, because at Garfield in particular, these students, once they leave Garfield, they're not being tracked. Nothing is known about them, if they're gone on to continuation school, or if they're in prison, or whatever happened to them. So for us, it's very alarming that the school, because it is so overcrowded, which right now there's 4,633 students at Garfield High School. So Garfield High School has actually grown by 500 students in 4 years. And that number that I mentioned to you of 59% keeps growing, because if you imagine, if 59% of students are being pushed out of school, and every year the school is growing by 100 students, how many more kids are actually on the streets because they have no other opportunity?
Well, Luis, let's talk about what your particular campaign is, which is trying to get into school, and why don't you start off with your demands and what you're asking for?
Well, the community members, teachers, students, and parents from Garfield High School, we've collected close to 2,500 petitions from Garfield High and Griffith Middle School parents, which is the feeder school to Garfield High, are asking the district to make a priority that a school be found to alleviate Garfield High School. There's actually $83 million of taxpayers' money that was approved from bonds for both Phase 1 and Phase 2 for new school construction, yet the district has dragged their feet from finding that site and making sure that a site would be found. Because if we actually don't find a site by June of this year, the money from the State Allocation Committee, which would be one-third of matching funds to pay for this school, which is $83 million, will be lost. And what we're scared about is that with Schwarzenegger and the cuts he's been making, we're going to lose any of that matching fund in the future. So if we don't find a school by June, the parents and students of these schools feel that they'll never get a school. And they've been waiting, like I mentioned before, since 1925. So what we've done is we've done a petition campaign. We've also done pressures at the school board. We did one just back in January 26th, where we went to the school board and it forced a meeting with Tecosky. And out of that meeting, Tecosky agreed to both our community criteria, which is a community criteria that was created by parents and youth of the community and also some community-based organizations that talks about that in order for there to be a school in East Los Angeles, it needs to follow this criteria. And one of the things is we want to make sure there's minimal displacement of residents, making sure the school is a neighborhood school and it's accessible to transportation. We want to make sure it's within East Los Angeles and it's not put somewhere else, because one of the things, you know, the district has promised through this whole new construction period is that they want to end involuntary busing, and they also want to make sure that the schools go back to a traditional track schedule. And we feel the best way is that we want to make sure the school is in the community. So we're asking Tecosky and Romer to not only prioritize that site being found, but that they look very closely, because we've actually endorsed the site, which is adjacent to Belvedere Park, which would be a site that not only fulfills our criteria, but would also make sure that the school is within the neighborhood and it's also accessible to transportation.
That was one thing that I wanted you to mention, because I know when I grew up on the, you know, corner of Exposition and Vermont, and there was always this fear for USC actually expanding into our neighborhood. Uh-huh. And, you know, my mom was always like, you know, we're not selling the house. We're not letting them have it. And I know particularly around the site that you have, it's actually a county building, so it's not actually displacing any residents, any renters, et cetera.
Yeah, and the county in the past has been willing to sell, and also the district understands that if they choose a site, it would not impact any homeowners because they wouldn't lose their home. It's actually on a corner adjacent to a park. And, you know, one of the misinformation that's out there by the opposition, which is called the Save Belvedere Park Committee, is saying that they're going to take park space. What is actually going to happen if they actually build the school there is they will put $10 million to refurbish the park. And they'll create a whole new gym. They'll, you know, make sure all the fields are brand new. And, you know, this park, you know, these parks have been around for a long time. They need refurbishing. So one of the things about getting the school built on this corner is not only will it refurbish the park, but also it will alleviate the overcrowding that we have talked about that exists at Garfield High, and the school will be right there in the neighborhood. Because, you know, for a lot of these students who get bussed out, they have to go all the way to the Valley, which is, you know, sometimes a two-hour bus trip for them.
Right.
And now if they stay here within, you know, the community, they don't have to go as far. And, you know, and like, you know, Maria's story had mentioned, you know, she has classrooms, you know, some classrooms have 63 students. And one of the worst things about year-round schooling that a lot of people don't know about is that in a traditional track school year, a student receives 180 days of school. But in the year-round schedule in which Garfield is on, a student only receives 163 days of teaching. That means in over a four-year period, that student is going to miss out on 68 days of teaching. That's close to a full semester that they're going to miss out on. So a lot of the students, not only are they not being prepared, like you had mentioned in the article, that only one out of 16 is going on to a four-year university,
right,
but also when they do get prepared, they're getting less than a half a year of teaching and learning because these schools are so overcrowded. So we're really at a crisis point right now in East LA schools and all over schools and high schools, especially, you know, South Central and Pico Union and East Los Angeles that these schools are so overcrowded that, you know, right now there's a priority that high schools get built. And also, you know, making sure Tecosky and Romer understand that East Los Angeles parents, students, and community members are beginning to organize to make sure this reality happens and that they don't lose their school because the district continues to drag their feet.
Well, one of the things that just I get this kind of connection, this correlation to, when you're looking at, you have 63 people in a high school classroom, which I can't even fathom. When I was teaching in Oakland as a high school teacher, we were on like 42-45 people, which was crazy, but 63 is just amazing. And so we look at, okay, who occupies this district? Who are like racial economic breakdowns? And then we also look at how is the prison system expanding? And so it's like they're either packing you in the schools or they're packing you in the jails, and that's where the money is going. To kind of get more into the nitty-gritty of the campaign, you were talking about the Friends of Belvedere Park.
Yeah, the State Belvedere Park.
Yeah, so who are these business interests, or who's fighting against this school?
Well, it's a variety of interests. One, I mean, just to let you know, is a lot of them don't even actually live in East Los Angeles. They live adjacent to East Los Angeles, which is Monterey Park community. So some of the leaders live in Monterey Park, and so they feel that even, you know, not only are they NIMBYs, but also if a school gets built, you know, it's not even that close to their house. So they're saying even, you know, don't build a school in my backyard even though it's 3 miles away from my house. The other interests are, you know, there's some business interests. Actually, the president of the East LA Chamber of Commerce, his name is Eddie Torres, is actually on that committee as well. And other ones are just homeowners who we feel have been misinformed by this process. They've been scared by the State Belvedere Park Committee, and they've been telling them that if they build a school, we're going to lose our park. If they build the school, you're going to lose your home. And that if they build a school, you know, one of the biggest fear factors that the State Belvedere Park Committee has been using, that if they build the school in their neighborhood, crime will go up because we're going to have all these young people. But what we're saying is these are the same young people that live in East Los Angeles. These are the same young people that have been denied an education and an opportunity for close to many, you know, close to 10, 15 years because their school is so overcrowded. And what we're saying is that if a school doesn't get built, like we had mentioned, you know, Garfield has gone up by 500 students in the last 5 years, and it'll continue to rise with populations increasing, what we're going to have is we're going to have more young people who are going to be pushed out of Garfield High School and more young people who have less access to, you know, good-paying jobs or any opportunity that crime will eventually will go up, you know, but where are these young, you know, you had mentioned, you know, where are these young people going to be placed into? And, you know, one of the studies we've actually done with students at Garfield High, the students actually did a survey where they surveyed close to 800 students. And one of the things that they saw is that 64% of students surveyed, out of the 826 students, had never discussed what it meant to go to college with their counselor. So a lot of these young people, not only are they lacking the opportunity if they do get pushed out, but the young people that do, who are still at Garfield High School, don't even get access to the information because they're, you know, it's so overcrowded, one, and then two, when they do eventually get pushed out because none of them are getting the information, there's lack of opportunities outside. So what you have happening, like you had mentioned, is you have a rise in the prison industry and you have a rise of a lot of these young people who are being locked up. And to give you an example,
Luis, I want to, is okay? Yeah. This is Eric Mann. How are you doing? We wanted to move a little bit to the movement side of the story because I think you've done a really good job of explaining the need, the critique. I had two questions. Is the Sierra Club one of the groups that's opposing this school?
Yes, it is. The Sierra Club, because they're saying that there's going to be a lack of park space.
Isn't Sierra Club one of the most racist environmental organizations you've ever seen?
Yes, it is. I mean,
they really get me sick. You know, they Sierra Club is big on, you know, population control, and Sierra Club has been opposing immigrants. Mm-hmm. Sierra Club has opposed the bus riders union, by the way, because they want suburban rail and they don't care about 400,000 bus riders. So it's pretty interesting that allegedly environmental group would be denying Latino and Chicano students the right to go to school.
Yeah. And, you know, and part of it is, like you had mentioned, is we feel that they're anti-immigrant. you know, one of the biggest, critiques of overcrowding by groups like Sierra Club is they say that because of immigration, these schools are overcrowded.
Did you ever ask them to think about going back to Europe or wherever they came from, these people?
I know, because, for the Sierra Club, first of all, they're getting involved in a struggle, with students and parents who've been trying to fight for the school now close to 4 years, because the process began in 99. And the Sierra Club has in many ways threatened both with lawsuits and also to say that if a park, if a school gets built adjacent to the park, they're saying that, people from the community could lose park space. And all you have to do is if you go to the park at the hours of 8 in the morning to 3, where the park would be used by the school with joint use facilities, there's no one ever at the park. So what we're beginning to say, they care, at the expense of young people's development, at the expense of young people going to school that gives them a quality education, they don't want a school built there because for them what's more important is a park space and not the people who live in the community who would, really, make sure that these students, if a school does get built, the school would give them a lot more opportunity than it does right now at Garfield. But yet for Sierra Club, that's all they care about is that park space.
That's right. This is Luis Sanchez of the Inner City Struggle. Luis, and your last question is, I think Damon and I are with the Strategy Center and Bus Riders Union. It's hard building a movement. I mean, everything you said, but if you think about, weren't they called the East LA blowouts in the 60s?
Mm-hmm.
That, where's the movement today? I mean, how hard it is, given the racism and national oppression that you're describing. I know you were out there organizing, just like how we know how hard it is on the bus, but why isn't this just a fait accompli? Why isn't this just, we got to have this? Why is it so hard to build the movement? It's not, where is the movement to demand this school now?
I mean, I think the movement is beginning to build. Like I mentioned, 2,500 parents and students have signed a petition, but I think one of the hardest parts is that for so many years, people, different interest groups have kind of taken advantage of this community and never has there, for example, people were fighting the school like it's a prison or it's a freeway.
Right.
And what that shows you is no longer is there a priority, are schools and hospitals a priority in our community, but yet on the same other side, the sheriff's station actually has expanded and actually has taken over park space and no one has raised a voice because they feel that the sheriff will protect them. But if they build a school in our own community, that school is going to bring violence and crime. I mean, that just shows you in terms of kind of like the worldview that we're beginning having to organize against because a lot of these mostly homeowners and business interests have basically misinformed the community and making it seem that if they build a school in this community, that's what it's going to equate to, more violence. But yet they're allowing the sheriff station to expand and take over a good percentage of the park and get rid of, part of the lake that exists there and, really, really, get rid of park space. The school's not going to do that, but yet no one's ever even, raised anything. So I think part of in building the movement is raising the consciousness of people in the community to make sure that they understand, how building a school will lead to this or getting, accessible transportation. Like the Bus Riders Union has been doing. But on the other side, we have to also call out how, for example, police, for example, one of the things that's happening actually in the schools is because of the cuts, they're actually calling on the police to come more on campus. And instead of parents doing, working with, the school to make sure that, school's not, some stuff is being controlled at the school, what they're doing is they're actually having police come on campus now. And they're actually writing grants because of that, So you have an expansion of the police, but yet, same on the other side, there's not schools being built. And so law enforcement is seen as the best way of dealing with, for example, truancy amongst young people as opposed to just getting a school built. And the reason these students are being truant is because there's really the school and the quality of life at the school is not giving them any opportunity at all. So I think the movement...
Luis, we're about running out of time, so why don't you give a phone number that people can get in contact with if they want to help you out?
Yeah, so the number for our organization, we could be reached at 323-780-7605, and our website is www.innercitystruggle.org.
Great. Thank you, Luis, for joining us. That was Luis Sanchez from Inner City Struggle. We also had Ty Geltmaker talking about same-sex marriages, and Karen Bass was running for 47th Assembly District. I would like to just kind of tell you, we had Cassandra Wilson up at the top, Dead Prez, Tambu was also an incredible musician. Anytime you get to see him, go and check him out. And this is Kenny Garrett coming. We are going to be back in 2 weeks. We encourage everybody to give very, very generously to the KPFA fund drive, the fiercely independent KPFK. We'll be back on March 8th with the International Working Women's Day show, our special show. We're going to be having Ruthie Gilmore, who's going to be talking about women in the prison industrial complex, as well as Leanne Hurst-Mann, who's director of the Labor Community Studies Center's National School for Strategic Organizing, talking about when she was working on the assembly line in the auto factory and how she was also organizing on that same auto line in the 70s and 80s. So please join us again in 2 weeks and have a good day. This is Damon Azali, and I'm with my co-host, Eric Mann.
See you next time.